This is Back to Back.
Yo, what's up, Back to Backers? This is Willie Joy. Welcome to the show. This is Back to Back. This is my podcast. You're listening to it. You're doing it. You're really doing it. I'm over here talking to you from my compound. I don't know. It's just a normal place. Talking to you from a normal place in an abnormal time. Look, I took, I guess 3 weeks off of recording this podcast. I had enough stored up. Obviously, there was no break in the episodes. But this one, today, this is special. This was recorded just before the holidays with someone who I've wanted to have on the show forever. It's Chami. I don't know how much I really need to tell you about Chami. He just dropped his debut album, Year Zero, late last year, and it's an excellent album. A lot of different textures and styles and sounds on there, but it's all cohesive. It all feels like an evolution of everything he's done up to that point. It feels fresh, but at the same time, it feels, you know, sort of not plugged into any one time period or style. Look, it's a great album. That's all I'm saying. You got to go grab Year Zero. And Chami's been busy, you know, before the Year Zero album dropped. He was working with Lady Gaga, working on the single and several other records off her last album. And that's not even the only album of hers he's worked on. I think you'd be surprised to know some of the rooms he's been in, some of the tunes he's touched. We get into it a little bit in this conversation you're about to hear. Chami's also been running the Confessions record label for several years now, which is one of my favorite artist-driven labels out there. The quality level is consistently high. The music they're putting out is interesting, and it's always changing. You never know exactly what it's going to be, but you know there's going to be a high taste level involved. I think in general, Chami has become kind of synonymous with high taste level. And I think you'll start to figure out why that is pretty quickly once we get into this conversation. So you got to go follow him. There's a link in the description of this episode where you can go grab the new album. Keep up to date with everything he's doing. And just go follow Chami. He's the best. You can follow me as well at Willie Joy or at Back to Back Pod on all social media. Backtobackpod@gmail.com is the email address. Or you could just come join the Back-to-Back Discord server. To be honest with you, if you want to connect with me, if you want to give me some feedback, if you want to tell me who you think should be on the show or ask a question, if you need some advice, whatever it is, the Back-to-Back Discord, that's the best way to get in touch with me. I'm in there every day hanging out. And we have a great community of people there. If you make music or art, come post it up, get some feedback. I love Discord. I'm spending more and more time on there as the pandemic goes on and on. And I'd love to have you come hang out as well. So the link for that also in the description. And look, I'm not going to go on too long today because I know everybody's excited about this episode. I'm excited too. Chami doesn't do a lot of interviews and certainly not long ones like this. So I appreciate him trusting me to do this. I caught up with him when he was out in his studio in Miami. We had never really spoken before and I found him to be, really, really intelligent guy. Really fun dude to just talk to. Some great stories in there. And there's just some good life nuggets, some good wisdom in there, I think, to take away for anybody, no matter what your perspective is, where you're coming at it from. This was a rare treat. I hope you enjoy it. If you do, and if you want to support this show, if you like what I'm doing over here at Back to Back, the best way to support us, the best way to help me keep this show going, keep making free, awesome episodes for everybody out there each week. I say this a lot on the show. You've probably heard it before if you listen, but it is just as true today as it was the first time I said it. Back to Back grows off the strength of our community, off of word of mouth, off of people like you, yes, you, telling a friend to check out the show, throwing up a tweet, or tagging us in your stories. Again, I'm at Willie Joy. The show is at Back to Back Pod. I love to see it. I'm always going going to be replying, reposting, interacting, saying what up, generally meeting you guys. I love talking to people who listen to the show. I love getting your thoughts, and I really love seeing people spread it around. It means a ton to me. It helps the show a ton. And look, it's free. It's quick. You get to do a nice thing for a sweet, handsome boy like me. Everyone will think you're so cool and attractive, and then we all move on with our day. I think that's how that works. So shout out to everybody out there supporting. I love you guys. I'm thinking about everybody out there. It's a conscious effort for me to not just go down an apocalyptic rabbit hole about what's happening in the world right now. But look, getting to talk to you guys every week, it's helpful, man. It's therapy. I feel connected to you. I feel excited about art and music. Let's do it right now. This is me and Chami, back to back. Let's go. Yeah, I mean, it's got to be interesting because you've lived in Miami for a while now, right? A few years.
It's been 6 years now.
What was it like? Miami's such a unique place, right? And it's got its own culture and its own vibe. And I can see some of the parallels with Miami and France. And I know there have been other French people who have kind of gravitated towards Miami. What was the appeal of Miami in particular for you, as opposed to, you know, any other major city you could have moved to in the US?
So me and my friends, we made the move together. I'm talking about Snake, Mercer, Mala, and our manager. We were like, we are leaving France for now because there's a glass ceiling. That's the height.
Yeah.
Yeah. In France, that we couldn't go above that. We thought, at least. And I think we made the right decision to all move together in Miami. So Miami was kind of a... Raise your hand where you want to go.
Right.
So Miami came first.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's a beautiful place to go. And especially if you're young and all of your careers are on the rise, you know, that's just a fun place to go live, right?
It is. Yeah. Certainly.
Yeah. Well, and it's cool, man. Before I was coming to talk to you, you know, I was reading up a little bit about you, and I didn't realize that you and Snake and Mercer, that you guys had known each other since you were so young and had really come up, not just professionally, but you guys met when you were teenagers, right?
Yeah. Basically, we were 16, 17 years old when we met, and we were all... not on the production side at all. More of the DJ. It was more of the DJ thing. We were collecting vinyls, trying to get some gigs in Paris. And yeah, we connected through older people from our neighborhoods. I guess that's what happened. Shout out to them.
So you were just living near each other and you kind of ended up seeing each other in the record store, that kind of thing?
Yes, absolutely. And at that time, Snake was... He was working in a record shop in Paris. So every Wednesday or every weekend we were there for sure. Like trying to get the latest promos and, you know, those vinyls that the big famous DJs, they take first,
right?
Because they have the connects and you couldn't get the promos at that time.
Yeah. It's a funny thing, man. I've talked to other people about this on the show that, you know, because that's the era I came up with too. You know, I started on vinyl and, you know, now it's hard for people to understand that idea because music isn't scarce anymore. If you want a song, you can go get it. It's not a problem.
But, it's abundance.
Yeah, it's abundance, which in some ways is great. Right? Mm-hmm. Because it makes it easier for people to find what we're doing and to understand more about the culture. If someone's interested, they can just dive right in. But then there's something about having to work for it and having to, you know, like you said, show up early to make sure that you're the one who gets the record. You know, if you think back to those days, do you miss any part of it?
Yes and no. It's weird, man. It's how human beings are wired, I think. I like being comfortable. I like the convenience of having to scroll down my promo app and get the latest thing. And that's very convenient, I agree. But it's more work. Back in the days, maybe I relied more on others' opinions the people that were selling the tracks in the shop, they were always playing the best part of the records. Sometimes I got screwed over, you know.
Right.
they play a certain part of the album, and then the rest of the album is not that good. So yeah, I think nowadays it's easier to get great music, but you have to dig
yeah,
into it.
Yeah, that's true, right? Because it's so overwhelming to keep up with everything that's going on. It's fun. I'm just thinking about Snake working in the record store and, you know, telling people which ones they should buy.
Of course. Oh man, he was really good at that.
What was Snake like as a 16-year-old?
Wild.
Yeah.
As he is now, he tries to hide it, but yeah, he's the wild guy of the group. And right. I think to each his strength, but him was really pushing minds forward. That's for sure. I was maybe the real technical guy. Not that he's not technical, but he can do things. But we all have our own strength, you know.
Well, and that's so important, especially when you're young and you're all making your way together at the same time on the same level. I think having that group of people, each of whom can play a role, is really important. I mean, if I think back to my own beginnings, I mean, yeah, there was, you know, I'm more of a quiet guy and I'm not the life of the party and all, you know, I'm the guy who kind of hangs back and listens to what other people are saying. But I had a friend who, you know, was that really outgoing person and he would just light up a room. And when we would go somewhere together, you know, that combination, it was like you couldn't stop us, right?
There you go. I agree. We had that same dynamic, except we were three then four with Mala.
Right, right, right. And Mala came along a little later.
A little later, yes.
Yeah.
We had that beautiful studio, a little studio in the suburbs of Paris. And that was a complex of like maybe 10 other studios. And yeah, basically he rented randomly the studio next to us, and that's how we met.
It's funny. Do you look back and think about, you know, important times in your life where it wasn't really up to you? It was just sort of, you know, you were in the right place at the right time, or Mala was there when you were there. And if you guys hadn't been at the studio that day, you never would have met, that kind of thing. Hey, do you think about that in terms of your own career, your own life, those moments?
I'm glad you're bringing this. I think success, or whatever you call it, for like being successful for yourself on your own standards, it always is a great part of chance. It's major. I would say 50, maybe more.
Yeah.
It's 50% chance. And the people you meet, the decisions, the little decisions that you decide to go to, like we decided to go to the United States to like way before Miami. And we were in and out and trying to make connections and work with people. So without these connections, I think we wouldn't understand the U.S. As much as we did in the first place. So it's decisions and chance, of course.
Right, right. Yeah. And there's something about thinking about it that way that to me feels kind of, there's a freedom to that, because if it's chance and if it's out of your control, then really to me that almost makes me want to make myself better as a musician and make myself better as a person, because then whenever that chance pops up, you're ready for it, right?
Absolutely. It's the only thing you can control is you, your abilities, your skill, your talent, like how many times you showing up to the studio per week. Early on, I was really romantic about the creation process.
Right.
Oh, I'm waiting to have this inspiration that strikes me to make that song. But no, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. You have to show up.
Yeah, you have to show up, man. It's just putting in the time, putting up the numbers, shooting the shots. I love that, because that's kind of the same conclusion I've come to over the years. And for you talking about you know, the technical side of it and really just honing your craft and spending those hours. If you and Snake and Mercer and everyone at 16 were already DJing and buying records, I mean, when did you start with music? You know, if you're a young kid, is there music in the house? Are you playing instruments? What's around you at the time?
So my musical learning journey began very early on. At 4 years old, I was taking piano lessons, thanks to my parents.
Were they musical as well?
Yes, my mom plays guitar. My dad plays a little bit of piano. And they both sing a little bit. I wouldn't say in public which thing's better. Right. They're gonna listen to it. Yeah. And
they've got their strengths, right?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I come from a very musical family, not geniuses, but like people that love music. And I've been taking piano lessons since 4 years old. I think that helped a lot. Then I was really bored with the theory, and I wanted to play something else, you know, something more modern. I was tired of it, and then I just let it down. And maybe around 14 years old, I was buying my first turntables.
Wow. Where did you even get the money to buy turntables at 14?
Boy, that was, I come from a small village. So there in the summer, there's plenty of opportunities to make a little bit of money on the side.
Sure.
So yeah, I just worked in the fields, you know, like taking the tomatoes, like whatever job came up, I took it and I saved money and yeah.
Well, so why turntables? What was happening around you that made you even interested? I have to assume there's a hip hop angle there.
Yeah, of course. We had access to this radio show on the Saturdays. I think it was 10 a.m. from 10 a.m. to 12. And they were talking about it was DMC Championships. So yeah, I think 8-Track was around. So I was always listening to these crazy guys, like going very, very, very skillfully on the turntables. And it was only audio, no video at that time.
Right. Yeah, that's crazy that they would just play those routines on the radio.
So I started to decode what they were doing. And the one that came up with the best scratching technique at that time was Mercer. And I didn't know him when I was 14, but around that period, that was what all I was interested in was scratching and a little bit of mixing.
Wow. Yeah, that's really interesting that you would kind of get into it, not even from just hearing hip hop songs, but it's, you know, that side of it, the turntablism, the technical side, to go straight into that. I think that's kind of rare because
it was alien to me.
Yeah.
Alien and so interesting.
When it even sounded, you know, wasn't it Qbert who said that he was communicating with aliens? That's what it was to him.
Oh my God. Yeah, but basically it's a different way they invented to, you know, create art. And it has to be noted somewhere.
It took on a life of its own, right? It really became something else. And so you guys are, you know, you're DJing. Are you performing at all? Or are you just, you know, showing each other some scratches, buying some records?
Some shows I'd like to forget, honestly, because I wasn't ready for it. But yeah, I started playing in some really weird afternoons, parties. Mm. Like, just testing my skills. Like, I was the first act of the first act.
Right. Yeah. You weren't even like battling somebody else. You were just...
No. Yeah. Battling my demons.
Right, exactly.
But yeah, that was fun time.
Well, I mean, that sounds amazing, man. I look back at some of those early, you know, house parties and just weird, janky, illegal, whatever parties. I mean, yeah, there's nothing better than that. Were you thinking, or I should say, at what point did you start thinking that music could be, you know, something you do professionally? It could be a career. It could be something that wasn't just fun with your friends.
I was already involved in making beats. So I was listening heavily on to French hip hop at that time. So that was French hip hop, and sampling was big, obviously.
Is what, late 90s?
Late 90s, 99, 98,
yeah.
Early 2000. And I wanted to work with like lyricists, because this is something that I couldn't do. I don't know why. I'm not that good with words.
Sure.
So music was my way of expression, and I wanted to look like the people that I looked up to. So yeah, I mean, I tried, but that was so hard at that time, especially 2000 through 2005, six. There was no streaming, and the record industry was going down. So there was no money for a guy like me, no money.
Right. Do you think it being in France was part of that? Like, what was, because I'm familiar with some French hip hop and kind of the scene at the time, but I don't really know how big or small it was. Did it feel like kind of a small scene?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely okay. not. That was, to me, that was, the gates were open. So in 1 or 2 years, I got involved in some, you know, in some very, in places where you cannot go. Like I met with French hip hop groups, especially through Cut Killer and Snake too. He opened some doors for me as well on that side. And, cause he was gigging with Cut Killer, and, they had a radio show together and other DJs. And I was always in the background, and I could see like so many people coming in every Wednesday. And that was to me, that was a time where I could, hey, here's a CD of my songs, of my beats.
Right.
You like it? I'd like you to call me back. So I did some tracks. I made some friendships even, but there was no money. And the at some point, I think it was 2012. I'm done with it. I am done with this. I need to make some money. I need to make it work at some point. It's not just going to be passion, because I'm being a teenager and having a passion is fun. It's fine. But when you're 25, 26, it's not fun anymore.
Yeah.
You need to make some money.
Yeah.
So I was tired of the scene. And then I saw DJ Mehdi. He started Carte Blanche with Riton.
R.I.P. to him, man.
R.I.P. to Mehdi, of course. The thing that put some confidence in me was he was coming from hip hop, and then he transitioned to electronic scene, and of course with the Ed Banger. That showed me the way. I was like, no, this is not just one lane. You can do whatever you want. And that opened the doors for me. Sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Mehdi is a legend, man. And so it's interesting how many DJs and producers and people in our world can talk about him. I think he was an inspiration for so many people kind of quietly, you know, the same way you're talking about. How did you become aware of dance music? How did that enter the picture? Was that something you were always into alongside hip hop, or did it come along a little later?
It was a little bit later. My mind was heavily focused on hip hop, and funk and soul was big to me as well. It was the sampling side of it. I wanted to know every record.
Yeah, you were doing your homework.
Yeah, absolutely. But later on, I was always listening in the back to FG Radio, which was the biggest electronic radio in Paris at that time. And they were playing some interesting stuff. So I always had an ear for that, but wasn't really interested until 2011, I think.
Do you remember any early dance or electronic songs that really caught your ear, that made you think about it a little differently?
Yeah, definitely Homework by Daft Punk.
Yeah.
That changed everything. I think one record with Milo.
Oh, what was the name? Drop the Pressure.
Yeah, Drop the Pressure.
That was a big
That was
record.
One of the records that made me took an interest in electronic music. Yeah, I just kept diving.
Yeah, man. Drop the Pressure. Yeah, what a tune. And that one too. Those are both great examples, because I think there's something in the water in France, and I don't know exactly what it is, but it's there's like this reverence for, you know, you were talking about the sampling and that you would always go back and find out where the sample came from and do the homework, that sort of thing. I feel like French culture and French art, there's a certain reverence for the roots of something and for where something comes from. And to take it to Milo, even that record, you know, you can listen to that record and there's, you know, these weird kind of 80s electro influences, but not sort of, not just stolen and not just sort of updated, but it's, you know, it's a respectful use of that style, right? And that's what that's what a lot of French music and French art is, as opposed to America, where we just kind of say, oh yeah, that's cool, I'll take that, you know, just like just steal it, you know, do whatever we want with it.
That's your words, but I don't disagree with you.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure you've been asked this question before, I thought about it, but you know, in your opinion, is there something different about French culture, the way you're brought up, the way you guys think about art and music, just kind of at a baseline level?
I honestly have no explanation. I try to, because I've been, this question has been asked to me before, but I always end up in a dead end, so I'm not going there anymore. It's I don't know. Like you said, there's something in the water. I don't know. This is maybe we are a very welcoming country. I don't know. We like other cultures.
Yeah,
most of the time,
true.
even if I want to agree with you, French people are kind of rude, especially in Paris. Maybe the weather. I don't know.
Yeah, but it's, you know, it's just a different way, man. American people, I think, are just as rude. It's just in a different way.
Different way. I totally agree.
Everybody's pretty rude at the end of the day. But so for you, how did the production side of it start for you as well? Because if we're talking about, you know, already you're in studios, you're giving CDs with beats to people. Did you learn production at the same time you were learning DJing?
No. I had another group of friends that were making beats on the side. And I came to them with my DJ strength. So I was, first of all, I was doing some scratches on their records. So I got in the studio with them and I kind of saw what they were doing with the beats and how they were placing the kick, the snare, the hi-hats and whatever they were doing. And that aspect, that technical aspect, I was really fond of it from the very beginning. So I like to be the DJ and to scratch on the records, but that wasn't enough for me. I wanted to create from ground zero.
Hmm. What were you working on at the start? What kind of software? What kind of hardware?
They were working on Quartz Audio.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't think you will find...
Yeah, I don't think that's around anymore.
And that was a demo. So there was a big green bar when like the 15 or 20 minutes were over. And if you have an export, you're done.
It's just gone, yeah.
Done. So we used to record on Tascam four tracks. Cassettes, the usual at that time. And then I think I began making beats on Acid Pro 3.
Sure. And where are you now in your current production as far as hardware, software? Do you use a lot of outboard gear, a lot of analog stuff? Are you more in the box?
I'm more in the box, but I like the outboard gear experience. And I discovered that made the link actually with my piano training years. So I can jam for, let's say, 15 minutes on a synth and only keep the best part. And I still had a good time, even if the song is crap.
Right.
But because to me, the studio time is I like that. I really enjoy it. I'm not bothered about working on a mix for a drum kit for 2 hours, 3 hours, I don't bother. It's nothing to me.
That's interesting. Is there any part of the, you know, between the writing process or the just messing around part or the more technical mixing, mastering, is there some part of it you look forward to, some part of it you really like more than others?
I until recently, I really liked the mixing and mastering because I think these things are overlooked in a way because they are the polish of a song. They are what a great song is. A great song, and a good mix cannot save, in my opinion, a bad song. But when you have a great song, a bad mix can ruin it.
Yes.
So this is the last polish, and you really want a mix to be respectful and creative at the time, at the same time. So that was the main thing I was interested in for the last, let's say, 4 years. But now I'm going back. I have a Moog. I have a organ. Some little things. I mean, it's not little. It's a goddamn Moog. But I just love being able to use my hands more than a mouse and a keyboard.
Yeah, you got to keep it interesting for yourself, right? If we're putting in these long hours that we're talking about, you gotta, yeah,
absolutely,
you gotta do it, man.
What do you work with?
I'm pretty in the box, man. I'm on Ableton. I've got a Korg, like a MIDI. I'm forgetting the model number now. It's not in front of me, but just one of the Korg ones that has the little snake microphone, so you can do like some vocoder stuff. And I used to have like a Novation base station and whatever the outboard synth was too. I'm forgetting the name now. I used to have more outboard gear, and I sold most of it, man. I'm mostly in the box.
That's great. I mean, I was in the box for 15 years. I just, with money came the opportunity to buy a little bit of gear, and I wanted to see if I liked it or not.
Sure. Yeah.
Well, right now it's just hybrid.
Of course. Yeah. And that actually, I think, is maybe a good way to talk about the Year Zero album that you just put out. You know, I was curious about the writing process for that album and whether you had changed anything about your process or just thought about writing a little differently while you were making this album versus some of the older tracks you've made.
Well, that's the thing with Year Zero. I didn't think that I would ever be able to make an album with this Chami project because that was single based, and then came the EPs that did quite well. And the tracks that were not the main singles on the EPs, they received a lot of attention too, a lot of praise too. So I was like, maybe I can express myself more than just the Chami sound that I'm known for and open the range of the sonic possibilities for me. And little by little came the day I opened the folder of all my tracks and I said, Maybe that could do an album. Mm. And that was it. There's no greater intention behind it. Like we found everything else later, the title, the artwork, and
collaborators.
Yeah, absolutely. But the primal intention was music.
Yeah, which makes total sense. I think that's kind of the best reason to make an album is that it just sort of naturally happens. Had you always been making other types of music? I mean, I know you've produced lots of other kinds of music, but just for yourself, when you're in the studio, had you always kind of made a bunch of different styles and just for a while, nobody else was really hearing them?
Yeah, I'm a pretty secretive guy when it comes to my creations. So I rarely plays anything to my friends or my family. My parents, they heard the album the day of the it was out.
Oh wow!
So I'm that guy.
Yeah. Do your parents? Do they understand what you do? Do they get it?
Yeah, I think now they do. They were very worried when I was from 17 to 25. I used to go to college. Like in France, we have like every college is basically free. Yeah. Like most of it.
Yeah, that sounds nice.
So I was able to go, and I did something with has to do with cinema. So I was studying script writing, but all that was some, you know, some way to say to my parents, don't worry, I'm still going through my classes, right, but I'm not letting this music thing slip away. Mm. So I try to make them happy, which is not what I would suggest to anyone. Just make yourself happy first and figure things out. But that's how I kind of, that's the man I am. I don't want to hurt people that I love, you know?
Yeah. And that makes total sense, man. I mean, that's extremely relatable. Of course you don't want to, you know, nobody wants to disappoint their parents. Everybody wants to, you know, you want your parents to be happy, yeah, but it's one of those things that I think if your parents or anybody's parents are kind of doing what they're supposed to be doing, if you make yourself happy, that's all they want at the end of the day, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
They want to see you get out of the nest at some point.
Yeah.
But all they want to do is somebody that is happy and doing well in life, I think.
Yeah, I think so too, man. And it's interesting. I feel like a couple times now we're talking about that it all comes back to just trying to make yourself happy and make yourself better at the end of the day. And then all the other things, you know, the success, the relationship with the parents, all that, if you just do well for yourself, the rest of that should just kind of fall in line naturally, right?
I think so. I think so. Yeah. But, you know, there's a, like we said, there's a great part of chance.
Yeah.
Positive or negative.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And there's luck. And there's, I mean, that's sort of the frustrating part is you can do everything right and it still might not work. That's a possibility. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But then it's like, well, what's the alternative? Just doing something you don't want to do, you know, something that's not going to
No
be
way.
Good. Right.
I'll be miserable.
Yeah, man. And it's a cool story, right? That you had this long period of time where you were grinding, you were figuring it out. Were Snake and Mercer and Mala, were you guys all kind of going through some form of that at the same time? Was there a support system? Was that helpful?
The support system was moral from everyone. So we stick to each other, but definitely, Snake was the most advanced in terms of being the frontman. He had gigs in Paris. He was a little bit more established than us, like way more, if I'm honest. Yeah. That was a support system. Like we looked up to him and, oh wow, he's doing this and he's doing that. And we kind of part of this too. So let's move forward. And yeah, he
just brought everyone up. Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And he was doing, you know, some pretty big production for what, hip hop and pop people early on. Like, yeah. I feel like people in America sort of don't know that side of his past.
Absolutely. We would talk more about it, but yeah, he's been grinding for it, yeah.
Yeah, man. No, I know. And it's funny because you say you're secretive, but I mean, he doesn't talk about anything.
No. I told you, I gave you a tip. He's the wild one.
One day I'll see it. I'll see if I can prove that true. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about, you know, when you did have that kind of realization, you saw Mehdi make that transition, and there was a lot going on in the French scene in that kind of hybrid, that in-between space at the time, right? Because there was Bloghouse and Electro, there was Ed Banger, there was Justice, Brudinski, Gustafelstein, you know, all these people. This is such an American reductionist kind of view. In my head, it's like, oh, well, they must have all known each other and hung out with each other because, you know.
Not true.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I guess what I'm asking is, what did the scene feel like in France at the time? You know, what memories did you have? Did you sort of see it happening, those styles merging?
Yes, yes, totally. I felt that it was the most free of all boundaries. I mean, they were breaking everything. Like every boundaries that you can think of, they were breaking it. This artist like merges. Like when you think about Kavinsky, when you think about Sebastian, when you think about, I think the label was Marble.
Oh, yeah, Marble. Techie, yeah.
that was everything. Like, for me, that was all I was seeing was, oh, they're free. They do what they want to do. I want to do that.
Techie was out there, man. Yeah. Some of those tracks. I mean, oh man, I loved some of that stuff.
And he did some things with rap music too. So.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. He's such an interesting guy. There's that one. Do you remember that Overdrive Infinity track that he did?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. It was just him repeat. It was like Overdrive Infinity over and over for like 10 minutes. It was so good. but for you, how did it, because your first, Chami releases were with the Fool's Gold, the Clubhouse label, right?
Yeah.
So how did you make that connection with A-Track and them?
Actually, that is a snake that knew A-Track. So we were looking for a label to release the music, and Snake came up with, oh, I'm going to send it to Alain and we will see how he's responding to it. And I guess they talked to each other a bit, and yeah, he was 100% like, this is it. I want to release that. So yeah, I'm glad that he put that trust in the project at first.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, those tracks, those early ones, I mean, Promises and, you know, those that took off. I mean, I remember hearing that in what, 2015 or whenever it came out. I think I got a promo for it. And right away it was like, oh, this is different. And I feel like a lot of people latched onto that song really quickly. Did it feel that way to you, or did it feel more like a slow process? Slow.
Yeah. Yes, a slow rise. Because we released it with Fool's Gold at first, and then we chose to go with licensing it with Ministry of Sound in the UK, especially. Maybe it was Europe. I don't remember very well that. But yeah, I mean, they worked on the European side, Ministry of Sound, and I saw everything coming together on both sides of the Atlantic. So yeah, that was really amazing for me to have that kind of feedback. And I was starting to tour a little bit in the US and Europe. But yeah, I mean, they were crediting me with the Future House thing. And yeah, I mean, all that era was really good. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's funny, man. I feel like that Future House label, I feel like you're still probably trying to dodge that label, you know? It seemed like immediately that's all. Not that it's a bad thing, but it seemed like immediately people just wanted to give you that title. And I never really saw you saying like, oh, this is me. I want this, you know?
Well, the kind of thing is, I kind of asked for it because I tagged everything on SoundCloud. I remember it was Future House.
Sure.
But that wasn't a genre at the time. I thought I was being original.
Careful what you wish for, man. Yeah.
Absolutely.
At least you can say you invented a genre, right? Even if you didn't mean to.
Co-invented, I would say, because there were all the people that were really on the same wavelength. I could name a few. I mean, Chris Lorenzo, not that he's very Future House at that time, but he really influenced everything that came after. He's still going strong.
Oh, with, yeah.
Chris Lake and Oliver Heldens was a big part of it too. I mean, the Dutch were heavily into it at first.
Yeah.
Heavily.
Yeah. Yeah, the Dutch, I mean, Dutch people, it's the Dutch people and the French people, man, and British people. I think it's those
British
three.
People too, yeah.
Yeah, there's something, again, something in the water. I don't know what it is, but there's just a more instant, more deep connection with that kind of stuff. There's a vision, I think. I don't know what it is.
I like that. Maybe there's a vision.
What was it like for you first starting to tour internationally and really, you know, just see the first little flickers of, you know, oh, this could maybe actually be this thing I've been trying to get for, you know, what, 10 years or more?
Oof. The moment in the US, I think that my music was very well received. I think that's where I spent the most time touring.
Yeah.
As well, I'm only grateful just for that to happen, and in such of an organic way, me just putting out songs and going on tour and seeing more and more and more people into it. This is just the best feeling ever, man. I think it was maybe in Tomorrowland, Tomorrow World, that is not happening anymore in the US.
Right.
It was one of the first time that I really realized that, oh man, this is big. Mm. This is kind of big. There's people here, people there. It's way in the back. And yeah, I'm doing it.
Yeah. And they probably know the songs. I think that's a big moment when you actually, the people in front of you know your songs.
Yeah. And one big moment I remember, and I think if I remember correctly, Jaws was in the crowd and I played Feel the Volume. It was a hard summer.
Yeah.
Pink Tent. I was playing After Dusky. And maybe I'm wrong about some things here, but this is one big moment for me. And I saw the crowd like going as one.
Yeah.
That's a beautiful thing.
Oh man. Yeah. Yeah. There's just hearing you say that, I kind of like got chills because it's something I think you can't really explain to somebody until you experience it, you know, but man, yeah, there's something in that. I mean, that actually makes me wonder about, you know, the spirituality and the connection with music. For me, I love playing live more than anything else. It's my favorite part of what we do. And it's really because I'm searching for those kind of moments, the ones you just talked about, and just trying to get another one. I'm not a religious person. I'm not particularly, I never thought of myself as that spiritual until I started having those moments. And then I was like, oh, there's something going on here that I can't really explain. And if I look back, music has always been sort of what opens me up to spirituality and to just thinking outside of my own body a little bit. For you, how do you look at spirituality? I mean, obviously, you know, you tour around with the priest collar and all that. You're making references to religion and to spirituality. Do you think of yourself as a spiritual guy? Is music a spiritual thing for you?
Absolutely. It's to me, it's the connection with from the ground to the sky and to what's beyond, whatever you call it. It's fine with me. And the collar thing, it was just I like the outfit, so let's give it a shot.
Yeah, it's a good outfit.
And I was born and raised Catholic, but not really going to church, baptized. But this is not going beyond that. To me, art is the special thing that human beings are able to do that can transport you outside reality. Music is a part of this too. I just try to reach that state of mind every time that I'm making a track. All the things that go after mix, mastering, arranging is only to help that feeling to be better.
You know, you're capturing something that's sort of, there's not words for it. It's very raw. And you know, again, if you're in the right time at the right place, sometimes you can capture a little bit of it. And then afterwards, I love how you put that, man. Yeah. Then it's just sort of just, you know, arranging it a little bit, making it so maybe other people can understand what was happening at that moment. Right.
Absolutely.
I think about house music too. And I mean, obviously house music famously, you know, it's about the groove and I'm getting ahead of myself, but to use like the future house idea as an example, I think people hear future house and they focus on maybe the sounds you're using or the melodies or maybe even a certain kind of bass sound. But to me, I think people don't really talk about your drums and your rhythm and the pocket that you use. Mm. Because to me, there's what you do. And I was thinking about this while I was listening to the Year Zero album. It's really the choice of the drum sounds and it's the certain swing, it's those little rhythmic touches that to me really stood out beyond all the awesome songwriting and all that. So I'm curious, you know, for you, where does a song start? Does it start from chords? Does it start from a melody? Does it start from drums? How do you put it together?
It depends, man. It really depends. I don't have a recipe. Maybe the recipe will be me playing around with a new sound or a new plugin or deep diving into plugin that I always use. Maybe say Diva or Operator. And trying to find something exciting about it and that keep me going. Or if I don't find it, I go do something else for an hour or two and then I come back. It's always back and forth. And I could say that on the drum side, the word is pocket. Like kick, snare, it has to be like that.
Yeah.
In a pocket. It's really important for me that everything is locked into a groove. And the sound design is secondary. I dare to say it. It's secondary to my approach of making music.
Yeah.
The way I'm trying to do things is the silences are very important too. Like the shorter your notes are, some notes deserve to be longer than others. And this is the conversation between the drums and the bass and the melody and or the voice. It's it's a tough conversation sometimes.
Oh man, I love the way you put that. The silence, it's so important, and it's so, because I think, you know, there's probably some younger producers listening to this. And I think when you're young, it was the same way for me. You just throw an ideas on the track, right? And so for me, I just fill up every space with something, you know, trying to get out all these ideas. And then as I've gotten older, the only thing I do anymore is just take stuff away.
See?
Yeah.
I think it's a sign of knowing what you want. Knowing what you want exactly, and means that your ear is trained.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. I think it's a sign of maturity.
Yeah, I think it's a sign of maturity. I think it's a sign of confidence at a certain point where you just say, oh no, this idea can stand on its own. It's good. It doesn't need anything else.
Let's fill out this whole frequency spectrum with...
Right, exactly.
From 15 hertz to 20K. Yeah. I want this full.
Well, what is it like when you're... producing for other people? Because obviously you've worked with Lady Gaga a bunch of times. You've made some smashed pop hits. I know, you know, early on you were talking about being in the studio with Snake. I think you were in the studio when they were writing Turn Down for What, is that right?
Yeah,
as well. Yeah, yeah, correct. So you've worked on a bunch of different projects and a bunch of different styles and sounds. Do you approach it differently? Do you think about it differently when you're working on somebody else's project versus your own?
Absolutely. It's easier. It's easier because you don't have expectation. You are not going to bear the weight of the work at the end. I just put everything Chami aside and trying to focus what Martin can do for you today.
And
that's how I approach every collaboration when it's not Chami.
You know, the Lady Gaga connection, am I right that you were working with her, at least you knew her kind of early on in the Chami project? How did that happen so early on?
We were going on back and forth in the US and we kind of make connections with some people that were in the studio with her at that time. And so we used to send beats and stuff. Barely having response. But that one, that two of three records that came out was just like the lucky strike, I think. When you're in France, you send beats. It's not like, it's nowhere like it is today. Today you can do things on the internet, but back then it was kind of a new thing.
Mm.
So I personally think that it's better to be in the studio with the person, unless there's a culture around it that's okay, let's send the beats and everyone does that. But I really believe in the power of being in the place, in the same room, and feeding off everybody else's energy.
What was it like the first time you got in the studio with Lady Gaga? Was it intimidating?
A little bit. Not that she intimidated me, but it was I was just looking at everything that I went through that led to this moment. And I was like, yeah, this is good, but
yeah,
I should not fuck this up.
Right. Yeah. How did I get here? Yeah. Obviously, you've worked with her a bunch. You've made a bunch of hits. And we kind of talked just now about your thought process when you're working on somebody else's project. To flip that, how do you, when you're working on your own project and bringing in collaborators, like say you've got Gunna on the Year Zero album, and he comes from a totally different world than the world that Chami lives in, right? Mm-hmm. So how, when it's flipped and he's coming in to work on your project, how do you kind of talk to collaborators about your world, and how do you get on the same page with people for your own project?
Well, that was kind of new for me. Because I guess we wanted to see each other, but we couldn't at, you know, he had some rehearsals last minute and I was about to get on the, I think it was the not the Elevation tour, but I had another tour at that time. So we couldn't see each other. And we had that friend in common. So I gave the beat to my friend Danny and he kind of played the beat to Gunna. And what they did in the studio, because I was not there, but he was texting me and I was always giving feedback. What do you think of this or that? So we try to make it like I'm here, but I was not.
Right.
Yeah, man. I think it came out really good and I was able to finish the song. It felt like I was doing a remix, honestly, at some point.
That's interesting.
I had the basic track and he did his part, which was great. I loved it. And then I kind of rebuild the whole thing from the ground up.
Yeah, that's great, man. Well, and I think that's the way a collaboration should be, right? Is, you know, you can't go into it just imagining, just wanting something specific out of somebody, right?
Yeah.
Because if you do that, you're going to be disappointed. If you just come in and say, do whatever you want to do on this, and then you react to it. I mean, that's what collaboration is, right?
Yeah, he needed a little bit of direction because I think this type of music is foreign to him. I'm just happy with the way we were able to pull this out.
Oh, yeah. I think it sounds great, man. And exactly like you said, I had never heard him on a record like that before, which is really interesting. What about I'm looking at other collabs now. What about working with Todd Edwards? Because
legendary.
Oh my God. Yeah. I don't even know if everyone listening to this is going to know Todd Edwards, but if you're listening and you don't know him, man, you got to go hop on Spotify, check out some Todd Edwards.
Do your homeworks.
Yeah, that's right. And the track you guys made, I mean, it's interesting because I think both you and Todd Edwards have a sound that you're known for, but the track that you made, it doesn't sound like either of those.
No. And I played him, that was the last song demo that I played to him that was the first, first of all, that was the first studio session that I had in LA. And I was kind of, not shaking, but, oh, he's Todd Edwards. I need to like do my best to bring in the best beat that I play him the best song. And we have to make something legendary, but he picked the last beat that I played.
Mm.
And I saw him click on that song and I was, damn, this is the right song. Let's do it right now. Let's do it. And he wrote the whole song. And that was just amazing. Like connection in the studio. We did it. I love it.
Yeah, no, I loved it too, man. And it's great. You know, he's just one of those unsung heroes of dance music that, oh man, I mean, so many influential records for so many decades. So it was just cool to see you bring him into your world a little bit and show him to a bunch of people who probably hadn't heard him before.
Yeah, he's great. I mean, and a great person too.
I've heard that. I've never met him, but everyone says he's like the nicest guy. Well, I mean, what was it like finishing up this album in 2020? This has been such a weird year. And I have to assume when you started thinking about this album, it was probably before quarantine and before the pandemic. And then you had to, I assume, make some adjustments. What was that process like?
Yeah, I mean, funny or unfortunately, the title was well chosen for the album in the year.
Yeah, true.
Everything was almost finished. I was at the latest mixing/mastering state of the project when I started the tour, and then the pandemic hit in the middle of the tour, and I was kind of playing all the songs for the public to get accustomed to it and get the early feedbacks and reaction. I didn't really want to say, oh, I'm playing this. This is new. I just didn't want to play quietly and see what they were jamming on. So yeah, I mean, I went back home. The last date that was supposed to happen was Chicago and didn't happen. Everybody flew home. And then for a week, I was like, I need to finish this album. I announced it for 2020. This is not, I'm not pushing it back forever. Maybe I waited for the summer to pass because I think we all needed some information about what was going on and how things were going to play out. But I'm glad that I didn't wait much longer for the release.
Yeah, man. And it's interesting hearing you talk about, you know, you get the feedback from the crowd.
Yeah.
And that's something I think people don't always realize, that as producers, we need that. We need to see how people react to what we're doing to sort of understand if we're crazy or not, right?
That's right.
Exactly. And it's tough. I think a lot of people have had a tough year trying to make music without that feedback, you know?
Yeah, I think I've said at some point that 2020 is going to be a very good year for creators, but I wasn't calculating the impact in the mind that being alone, being at home, and obviously every situation is different. Some people have family, some people are alone. If you're in Florida, it's different than if you're in New York or LA or in France or Italy. I still think it's in the struggle that comes the best art. I'm not looking for struggling.
Right.
But it happens. It will happen in life. So my word for 2020 is just hold on, be ready for what's next, hold on to what's best, and just try to live the moment present.
Yeah, that's beautiful, man. I think you're right. How have you been this year? Have you, you know, what have you been doing with your time other than, you know, studio time? Have you been taking care of yourself? How do you stay healthy and happy in a time like this?
I had a lot to correct on my health, and I was gaining weight. And when this thing happened, the pandemic, I was, okay, this is the time to reset. Now I wake up at 6:30, 7, the latest. I'm in bed at 9, 10, and I can push if I have something to do. But my regular, like sleeping, we don't realize it, but sleeping is huge. It's probably the best thing you can do for your body and your mind.
Yeah, yeah, and we've picked a career where we never get to do it.
No, so that was a major correction for me. Yeah, I try to be healthy every day. Not trying to go too strong, because I think it's not my way to go. Little increments, yeah. little by little, you know.
Yeah, if you're able to do just that and nothing else this year, that's a success to me, right?
Yes.
Yeah, if you can just take
big
care
success.
Of yourself. It's what you said earlier, just hold on, man. And I do think, I don't know how you feel about, you know, 2021 and shows coming back and all that, but I think whenever that does eventually happen, it's just going to be such a cool, joyful kind of feeling, man. I'm just, whenever it happens, I'm looking forward to that a lot.
Yeah, me too. I hope so. We've been holding on for about a year now, and I'm impatient, but I'm not too impatient. I just want things to be right. I just wait and see. And I'm really hoping that we can party safely again.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get there, man. We don't know exactly when, but we'll get there. I'm excited for it. Do you like the tour life, that cycle, you know, being out there doing the shows? This is, you know, that's exact opposite of what you were just talking about. You know, that's staying up late every night. That's being on a plane and having kind of not a regular routine. Do you enjoy that side of it as well?
I do enjoy it, but now I would be more careful with my health and the rhythm. I was really going strong for 5 years straight, like no major break. And that was insane. When I look back, that was insane. That's why my health started to decline a little bit. Yeah, I'm not going back to that.
Yeah, well, that's great, man. I think if any of us can have realizations like that, that's a good use of our time. But I wanted to make sure before we get out of here that we talk just for a second about the Confessions label.
Yeah,
because I love that label. I think I just got a promo for it last night. I mean, you guys release so much music. It's way more active than I think a lot of artist-driven labels are. And you started it pretty early on. It's been running for years, right?
Yeah, it's been three years, maybe four.
Yeah, yeah.
I wonder.
So, talk about just the experience of sort of your intentions when you started it versus how it is now, how the label has evolved.
Yeah, it started as a platform for basically what I didn't have in the beginning, in the very beginning. Because obviously after that, I had access to all the labels like Fool's Gold, but I wanted to do something a little similar on the same side to give a platform access to like a family for every young artist that don't know where to go and don't know how to sign their songs. So I made sure early on that we listened to everything. That was not easy.
That's a lot.
Trust me.
Oh man.
And today we have maybe 500 songs in the mailbox every 2 weeks. Last time I checked.
Yeah.
I got help for that, but it's tough to go through everything. So yeah, the platform was the main idea to give access to something nice for all the young producers out there that don't have a clue, but have great taste and great music. So I think we achieved that. And right now I would like the label to evolve more into not something more traditional, not at all, but something that is focused on maybe some artists, like the labels picked. I think we could do some great things. I don't want to say too much, but
yeah.
There will be a turning point. I
think that's great, man. And I think, certainly if you can pull on your own experience at this point, right? Because you've now had, 5-6 years of a successful project that you built yourself, and you can, I'm sure look back at choices you've made along the way and say this worked, that didn't work, and to be able to apply that to somebody just starting off.
Yeah,
I love that idea, man, because that's what we all wish we had when we were starting out, right? I mean, when you were starting out, did it feel like? Could you look to anybody? I mean, obviously we talked about Medi, but I mean, did it sort of feel like it was just uncharted waters and you just had these ideas and it was kind of like, let's just see how it goes? Or did you have anybody kind of giving you that same advice that you're now giving to other people?
No, actually I didn't have that knowledge to access to, but it felt really, the freedom that we had, like 2013, 14, the SoundCloud years, I would say, like you could make a career out of SoundCloud.
I know, man.
I mean, that's basically how I did it. Not just that, but obviously that was a starting point. But I mean, things are changing. The medias are evolving. The platforms are evolving too. So you need to shake things around and find some new path, I think.
Yeah, I completely agree, man. And I think it's great that you're thinking about helping people find that path, because a lot of artist-driven labels, I think, end up just sort of serving the artist and not really serving the people who are on the label. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's awesome, man. And everything you've been putting out, it's great. That's about all I got. Is there anything else that's on your mind? Anything else you want to let people know? Anything we didn't talk about before we get out of here?
Not that I can think of. I mean, it was great to talk to you, Willie. And
it was great to talk to you too, man.
That was a great experience. First time for me to do that.
Was it fun? I hope.
I think we could go for another hour.
We Let's could actually, yeah. We'll save it for part two.
Yes, absolutely.
Thanks. All right, take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye, man. That's the show. Shout out to Chami. Thanks for coming on the show, man. I really like that. I would love to do a part two sometime. For everybody out there listening, I hope you enjoyed that as much as I did. Don't forget Chami's new album, his debut album, Year Zero. It's out right now. It's amazing. You have to go grab it. And the link to do that is in the description of this episode. Also in that description, you'll find another link for the Back-to-Back Discord server. Click that button. Come join the Discord. Come say hi to me. Come join our great community of people. And as always, you can follow me at Willie Joy or at Back-to-Back Pod on all social media. And you can email me directly, backtobackpod@gmail.com. chami.com. That's it for this week. Such a good time chatting with Chami. I hope you guys out there enjoyed it as well. If you did, don't forget to let people know. Throw up a tweet, tag us in your stories. I will always be resharing and replying and just generally saying what up to you anytime I see people out there supporting. But more importantly than any of that, I hope you're doing well out there. I'm thinking about you guys. It's a wild time in the world right now. If you're in the United States, it's a really wild time. Take care of yourself out there. Be safe. Please be safe. Be healthy. Take care of the people around you. Don't put people in unnecessary risks. Make sure that you are taking care of your mental health. Make sure you're able to stay active in some way or another. Make sure your creativity is being stimulated. Make sure you're having some fun out there. Don't be too hard on yourself. Look, I could go on, but I just want you guys to know I'm thinking about you. I love coming here every single week and talking with you guys. And until next week, I'm just wishing you luck and happiness and success at whatever goals you are trying to accomplish. That's it. I love you guys. I'll talk to you next Tuesday. For Back to Back, this is Willie Joy. Peace.